This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Is your home stuck in a style slump? Well, 2026 is your year because Bob's Discount Furniture has incredible finds that pack a style punch and won't drain your bank account. We're talking statement pieces like the gorgeous Sofia sofa and loveseat with channel tufting and super comfy bobopedic cushions, or a farmhouse storage bed that hides the mess and still looks beautiful. Want to cozy things up? Snag an electric fireplace and make your home feel like an actual hug. They've even got the latest technology. Their showcase immersive sofa has Bluetooth audio, heated seats, massage, power recline, and LED lights. It's like having a movie theater in your home. Make 2026 the year you love your home. Get your picks in 26 at Bob's Discount Furniture.
You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio.
Hey, what is happening, everybody? Welcome in to episode 2 of the Portland Winterhawks podcast. I'm your host, Andy Dirt Johnson. You can follow me on Twitter at the Dirt Johnson. Want to thank everybody for tuning in to episode 1. We got some great responses and feedback. I know it was kind of a weird episode where we released it last week, but the conversations with Nick, Merrick, and Mike Johnson happened before the start of the season, but still hope it provided kind of a fun insight into the thought process going into the season for the play-by-play man and the head coach. We got a lot of cool stuff, I think, planned for you here in episode 2, and I'll tease that and set it all up in a moment. But as we'll start kind of every week, just a quick glimpse at what the team has been doing since the last time we talked. I know podcasts can be a little different. I'm used to being on the radio Monday through Friday and kind of everybody knowing, hey, what day we're talking about here. It is Thursday, October 28th, so depending on when you're listening to this. Portland had a rough one last night, a 6-4 loss to the Seattle Thunderbirds. The Rivals came into town to the Coliseum, jumped out to a 3-0 lead right off the bat, and then never really looked back. And you got to give them credit. I mean, Portland fought their way back into the game and outscored them the rest of the way, 4-3. But every time Portland would respond with a goal, Seattle quickly got back on the board. You know, it was 3-0. Portland cut it to 3-1. It was back to 4-1, and just so on and so forth. Portland was not able to stack up back-to-back goals to really cut into the deficit, and then eventually fell there. As I mentioned, 6-4 was the final. Dante Januzzi had a rough night in net. And he allowed 3 goals early on. They pulled him, and Lachlan Gordon came in. I do want to highlight Lachlan here at the end of the episode today. He's been kind of a cool story for Portland early on in the season, and it was one of those head-scratching games where, you know, you look at shots on goal. Portland had the advantage in all 3 periods. Outshot Seattle on the night, 38-31. So you love getting chances. The faceoff circle, they won 35-18 in the faceoff circle. So the advantage there for Portland. It just one of those nights, not great goaltending, and they fell. It's now a 3-game losing streak for Portland. They're trying to find that 1,000th career home win, and they're going to have to wait a little longer for it. It was a rough weekend against Everett on Friday and Saturday, and that's been the story of Portland's season. A 3-game losing streak to open the year, then they won 3 games in a row, and now a 3-game losing streak. So hopefully Friday night in Everett, they get back on the winning ways and can start another 3-game winning streak. I know one thing that everybody has their eyes on, and the team does, the fans do, everybody's watching. Jaden Durow, Reese Newkirk, and Seth Jarvis. The three names we're all waiting to hear. Are they going to be back in Portland? When will they be back in Portland? And I know I was talking to some folks earlier this week, and they're saying, well, maybe next week we'll have a firmer answer. Maybe next week we'll have a firmer answer. So everybody's waiting with bated breath. And we'll talk with Michael Kramer here on this episode, the managing partner of the Portland Winterhawks. And he kind of highlights why it's difficult for teams like Portland early in the season. You're missing three, not only key contributors, but you're just trying to figure out what your roster is going to look like. And so not having answers on those three guys yet, it is making Portland's life a little difficult. And hopefully it's sooner rather than later we find out those guys are coming back. It's great to see them having success and getting some chances at the higher levels, no doubt. But I'm sure Portland fans would love to get another glimpse at Durow, Newkirk, and Jarvis at some point sooner rather than later. So here's what we got coming up on the episode today. I'm really excited for both of these. So Nick Merrick, as I mentioned in episode one, the play-by-play voice, I'm just going to chat with him. I love Nick. He's a great guy. He's with the team day in and day out. And so we're going to get a glimpse from Nick on what he's seen from the first couple of weeks of the season, the players that have stood out to him, and then his thoughts on the upcoming road trip, which we'll also set up for you at the end of the episode. I want to start, though, episode two, with Michael Kramer. He's a managing partner, ownership change, obviously, here in Portland. Previous group going through bankruptcy, all that. There's been a lot in flux behind the scenes with this organization over the last 16 to 20 months. And Michael Kramer and his group stepped up, and it's been fun to kind of have somebody so involved. And his face, you can see him around the stadium. I got a chance to meet him at the logo unveiling when Portland decided to change their logo and had that big announcement. And it was fun. He's a passionate hockey fan and passionate about Portland, wants to turn this into a real place to be for sports fans here in this area. It's a priority. So Michael Kramer is where we're going to start here, episode two. Again, today is Thursday the 28th. I had a chance to catch up with him on Tuesday. So I mentioned the Seattle game, and you can blame me for jinxing it. I said, we talked about the 1,000th career home win for this organization, which they unfortunately did not get last night. So go ahead and blame me. I jinxed it on Tuesday when I talked with Michael. But hope you enjoy this conversation. Here's the managing partner of the Portland Winterhawks, Michael Kramer. All right, very excited to sit down now for the second episode of the Winterhawks podcast with the managing partner of the Portland Winterhawks, Michael Kramer. Michael, thank you so much for the time. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for doing this. I know, the hockey fans here in this city are so passionate and they're so excited about kind of the new vision and the direction that things are going. I just wanted to start with you kind of on a background, how you got involved with the Portland Winterhawks, how this all came about. And because I think it's been about a year now, right, since this all went through. So how did it all come about and how did you get involved with the Portland Winterhawks?
Yeah, so I think it's been actually maybe a little less than a year at this point in time that we finally acquired the team. I've known about the Winterhawks for a long time. It's one of the greatest franchises out there in major junior hockey. I was actually years ago on the board of the Rose Quarter. So I got familiar with the Winterhawks as well as the Trailblazers and Portland sports way back then. But we were watching the Winterhawks situation as they went through some of their challenges in the bankruptcy in the face of COVID. Mm-hmm. We saw that they were going through a sale process, and we decided that it was something that we would be interested in pursuing. So reached out to the company or the team probably middle of last year, I guess it was. Expressed that we would be interested. They were great and facilitated a process for us to learn more about the team. We made a bid that was accepted by the court, the bankruptcy court at the time, and we closed, I think it was January 2nd or 3rd on that. So it was a long process, but we got through it.
Yeah, you got through it, and you mentioned a little less than a year now. And I mean, that's a tough circumstance, too, to take over a new team where you got COVID restrictions and the weird season that was last year and not having any fans. I know I had a chance to do a couple of television games, and it was just weird being there and no fans. You're feeling like you're watching a glorified scrimmage. So how was this first kind of less than a year, gone for you guys? And how nice is it to have a new season back with a sense of normalcy, if you will, of fans being back in the Glass Palace?
Well, it's nothing better than having fans back. And, we're looking to get more fans there. And frankly, I don't think a day goes by where we don't talk about how we can get more fans in there and how we can provide a better experience for the fans. You know, we're really working through it. But you're right. You hit it right on the head. When we bought this team, it was in a bankruptcy, being managed by a professional bankruptcy manager on that in the face of a global pandemic. So a lot of the infrastructure that was at the company had been eliminated. We've been, you know, working hard to try and rebuild that up. But I'm with you. I was at a couple of games last year, and I felt like I was the only person in a 10,000-seat arena, and I just wanted to cry.
Right. I know. It was so weird, was it? And I just walking me through all this, it's just wild to think of what, you know, the bankruptcy and everything that was going on with the team and COVID. And, you know, I heard that you got a chance now to be back out here, I think, for the home opener and the first weekend of games and being around the arena. So what was it like? You know, obviously much different from when you were here last year, but when you got a chance to be in the building with fans and just kind of soaking in that game atmosphere with fans being back.
It was great. And, you know, for the games that I'm there, it's great. I don't miss a game. I watch everyone on TV. So I get to, you know, I really focus on not only the play on the ice, but what's going on in the stadium and, you know, are the fans engaged or not? And, you know, we're really working hard to try and rebuild that up.
Yeah.
But it is great. And, you know, one of the things that I always tell people, is particularly people outside of Portland, is you have no idea the hockey history that is embedded in Portland, and the spirit and the fans and just the, you know, there really is a true hockey community there. And again, it's incumbent for us to deliver a good product and feed that passion and get these folks out there.
Yeah, I mean, I've lived in this city my entire life, and I remember being at the new logo unveiling ceremony, and I got a chance to meet you there. And a lot of that history was stuff that even I didn't know, as somebody who's been around the team and followed the team and been going to games since I was a kid. So I you know, there's two notes for maybe the non-diehard hockey fan that's listening to this that I wanted to bring up. We'll get to the logo change kind of here in a second as a, you know, a topic in and of itself, but the idea of how the Blackhawks logo became connected to Portland, I didn't know that story, and that was wild. And then for some, the connection to the Stanley Cup, that I think there's probably a lot of hockey fans that, or sports fans that don't realize Portland's connection to that. So I was wondering if you could touch on both of those.
Yeah, well, I mean, for those that don't know, Portland is the first U.S. city to have its name engraved on the Stanley Cup. So I think it was back in, I want to say 1914, maybe it was. You know, unfortunately, they lost to the Montreal Canadiens. But they were the first team to actually, U.S. team to actually have their name engraved on the Stanley Cup. And again, you just sort of roll forward. There's so many different, you know, important pieces of history. You know, the story about, frankly, the Blackhawks, before we even get to the jersey component of it, when the Blackhawks became a franchise in the NHL, they started their team by taking all the Portland players, re-signing them to the contracts on that. And then you had the, you know, just the wonderful run of the Buckaroos. And I mean, I'm just blown away and just thrilled by how much support there still is for the Buckaroos. You know, you mentioned the Buckaroos, and people's eyes just light up and, with affinity to it on that side of it. So, and then, you know, obviously your other topic that you brought up, the fact that when we started the Winterhawks in '76, as the story goes, we didn't have enough money for jerseys, so the Chicago Blackhawks were kind enough to give us some of their old jerseys on that. And that's how it came into play.
That is so funny how something like that can connect, and then that becomes your logo and your jersey for so long. And I know for you guys, you're probably tasked with, when you take over, the things that you want to change, the things that you want to keep the same. And one of the major changes that fans have seen so far is that logo reveal. And I, you know, some people are know, more willing to accept change in their life, and some people are a little more hesitant with it. So I imagine you heard a lot from fans in that process. But what went in it for you guys, the thought behind wanting to change the logo, and how did that come about of creating the new Winterhawk logo that I think you guys hit out of the ballpark, and it has been kind of become unique to the city and this franchise?
Yeah, you know, I tell you what, Andy, one of the things that I've learned in my short tenure of being an owner is the passion that fans have for their team. It seems like pretty much everything we do is sort of front and center, and everybody's got an opinion on it. some support it, some don't support it. You know, but what we're trying to do is we really are trying to do what's best for the team and the city of Portland. And when we got involved in this situation, even before we bought the team, one of the things that really jumped out at us was the history and the legacy of the team, the Winterhawks, in the sense that, you know, Sports Illustrated or Sporting News has named us the, you know, the number one development team out there. The number of NHL players that we put into the pros is just unmatched by everybody. The winning tradition. And when we started thinking about that, what we really came down to is this is a team that has earned and deserves its own identity. And, you know, we didn't want to be known as the stepsister to the Chicago Blackhawks. We wanted to be known as the Portland Winterhawks. And that was really the big driver in the logo change, was creating an identity of our own that we could all be proud of and that Portland can stand behind and say that's ours, and we can continue to build the tradition of the team behind. Right. So we, you know, that's how we went into the logo change. And again, it was important to us to try and create something that, again, tied to the traditions and what we stand for on that. So obviously the Winterhawks, we were adamant that we wanted to keep that name, you know, so hence the Hawk. I know there's been a lot of debate, but the designers really did sort of focus on making it a hawk. So anatomically, it's a hawk. You know, the white has the river, or the, excuse me, the winter connotation to it. You know, the beak with the gold, you know, we like to call that's our championship gold, because that's what we're after, is winning those championships. The feathers at the top is sort of a nod to our past, you know, and then, you know, one of the parts that I really like about it is how they built in Mount Hood. Yeah. into the body of it, because, you know, we really do want to send the message that this is Portland's team, and, you know, Portland has a hockey team, and, you know, no one should get that confused with anything. And then obviously, you know, we did some fun stuff by burying the WH into the snow caps of the Mount Hood silhouette there on it. So a lot of thinking went into it. A lot of time. So we're hoping that it sort of takes on, it catches on, and people accept it for what it is.
Yeah, I know as a radio host, I hear from listeners all the time about suggestions and things they like and don't like. I can't imagine what that life is like for an owner when you got to hear from the fan base. It's enough for me to even deal with just, you know, being on the radio. And you mentioned the rich hockey history that exists here and going back so many years. I know the team and you were hopeful to get that 1,000th career, you know, organization win this weekend. It didn't happen against Everett. And for an editor's note, we're recording this on Tuesday. The episode will drop on Thursday. So we're just going to go ahead and say they got it Wednesday night at home against Seattle in a rivalry game, because what better team to beat than Seattle for 1,000? But what does that mean to you? I know you're just a recent part of this history, but 1,000 career home wins, what does that say to you about this organization?
1,000 of anything's a big number, right? So real excited about that. You know, if it happens against Seattle, you know, that's a cherry on top to do it against the rival on that. But I think every time these boys go out onto the ice, you know, they're going out thinking they're going to win. And that's, you know, a credit to Mike Johnson and what he's done and the environment that he's created out there. So, we're really looking to having a great year on it. You know, we're still trying to figure out our team.
Sure.
As you know, we still have a bunch of our 19, 20 year olds playing up in the pros and the AHL and waiting to figure if they're going to come back or not and what we do from there.
Yeah, it's a testament to how good the team is run that you have that many guys away. And I know it's that, I remember talking with Mike a couple of weeks ago, that weird flux period where you're trying to build your team and your roster and who's going to be here and who's not. And you're waiting on those phone calls from AHL and NHL teams to find out who's going to be on the roster. It's not an easy thing. And, you know, I remember hearing an interview of yours when you first took over, and, you know, the Hawks have historically split time between the Moda Center and the VMC, and you had mentioned that you kind of wanted the VMC to become the home of the team and you know, to become the place for Winterhawk fans to go and known for a hockey arena. And so as you got a chance to soak in the game day atmosphere, I'm sure this is something that you will hear a lot from on fans. They all have thoughts on ways to improve it or change it, but I've already seen some changes that you guys have made to some of the decor and the way the building looks. But what about the game day atmosphere? Have you guys tried to go through that process of changing? And then what is still maybe on the to-do list of hoping to get accomplished in the future?
Oh, God, Andy, there's a huge list. There's a huge list of things that that we're focused on and that we want to get done. And again, we're going to get them done. We owe it to the fans to create an incredible atmosphere. I want my vision for the Winterhawks is to continue and, you know, increase the quality of play on the ice. And, you know, we have the best coach out there for doing that and the best hockey operations for doing that. And then I want to create an environment in our arena where people just look at it and say, I want to be there. I just want to be there because that's such a fun and great environment. We're having challenges. There's no question about it, right? We are rebuilding a staff of people. We've lost a lot of people through the bankruptcy and through COVID, and we're rehiring, we're adding people. I think we're adding great people in addition to the people that we still have there. We're working with the city, we're working with the building to try and get approvals to do things, to increase the atmosphere there. You mentioned some of the decor. For the first time ever, you walk through the VMC and you see the Winterhawk stuff. I mean, I walked around there the first time and I saw, Jimi Hendrix concerts and things like that. But, as the main tenant in that building, there was nothing about the Winterhawks on that. And, the city was great. They worked with us to help, allow us to brand it, brand the building a little bit, and introduce that. And, we're going to continue to do that. We're going to continue to work on the, in-game experience because, again, we want it to be a place that people want to come to and, are upset if they don't get to come.
Right, right. I know the changes you've made have already been noticeable, and I can't wait to see what is still to come. I'm curious to ask, how did Michael Kramer become involved or in love with the sport of hockey? You sound connected with it, like you've been a passionate fan for a long time. You know the history well. How did Michael Kramer get involved or fall in love with the sport?
You know, it's so funny you say that. I'm a Southern California born and bred boy. And to tell you the truth, I couldn't tell you where a piece of ice was around where I grew up. So I moved to New York and, got married to a wonderful woman, kids, and our oldest son kept saying he wanted to play hockey. And we kept saying no, because we didn't want to go through that. And, we relented and, 20 years later, here we are. My oldest son is a coach in the NAHL. My middle son, plays hockey. We own a rink here with youth hockey. We own obviously the Winterhawks, so we're all in on the hockey side of it.
You're a hockey man through and through. It's so funny. I got a family member that lives in New York, and I've seen him make the same kind of changes. He moved out there, fell in love with the sport. His kids are playing hockey, and it's so funny. You see, usually like families will share videos of softball or team, you know, soccer and that kind of stuff. And I'm getting little clips of him playing youth hockey, and it's hilarious. I love to see people involved. And you mentioned not a sheet of ice where you grew up in Southern California. Is that an emphasis for you guys as a group here in Portland? I know that always growing the youth hockey impact, because I've always believed as a sports fan, it's easier to become, you know, in love and passionate about a sport when you play it at that level. You just have a base understanding of it. So where does the youth hockey impact fit into to your vision for the future?
I mean, there's nothing more important. And yeah, I agree. There is, you know, there is the age old adage of cultivating the fans when they're young and you know, building the fans. But I tell you what, I'll come at it a little different from that. To me, there is nothing better for a kid than participating in youth sports. Having a good experience on that, yeah. Learning how to compete, learning how to practice, learning how to get better, learning how to lose on that. And I think it, you know, from a community standpoint and from an individual standpoint, there's nothing better than extracurricular activities for kids. And we are very, very focused on that. You know, Akaika Young, the guy responsible for the Skate Center, is an important individual in our overall organization on both sides, and we have told him we want to do everything we can to sort of build the sport of hockey in the Portland and frankly all of the Oregon areas. Yeah. So we want to build it out. We want to make it available for boys. We want to make it available for the girls, and just really push it. And frankly, we've been talking with the NHL a lot about how we can bring some pilot programs to town to help sort of build that, because it just makes everything better.
Yeah, and I agree completely with the take on youth sports. It teaches you a lot of good lessons about life, and it's important for all kids to be involved and involved in all sports, because it not only makes you better as an athlete when you're doing a bunch of different things, but you know, brings you around different people. So I agree completely there. We've kind of highlighted the tough circumstances of when you took over and everything that you guys have been through. I'm just curious, you know, looking back now, however, it's, you know, close to a year now that it's been, and you've had a chance to kind of do a, you know, an MRI, if you will, on the organization and what works and what doesn't. You mentioned the tough financial times with the bankruptcy and all that. I'm just curious, what has stood out to you looking back that has worked really well, either on the ice or off the ice, that the organization has done? And what are some of those areas that have stood out that you feel like need the biggest improvement?
So no question in my mind, the thing that has impressed me most about this is the boys.
Yeah.
The players that come through, the passion and the drive to which they have. I mean, these are 15, 16 year old boys that are moving from, you know, Canada, different countries. They're coming to Portland to pursue their dream to be professional players. And they're trying to grow up at the same time. And the maturity and drive that they have is just incredible. And we spend a lot of time talking about that, you know, because people see us as a sports team. So we have to, you know, train them to be good athletes. And, you know, we always talk about Portland to the pros, and this is a way to get to the pros. But we also have a responsibility with these boys and their families to protect them. And, you know, I think, you know, as well as everybody, the educational programs that we have, that these boys are going to the local high school in Portland. They're going to college classes here in the arena, and we take that seriously, because we're really proud of the Seth Jones and Cody Glasses and Seth Jarvises of the world that make it to the NHL, but we're equally as proud of the boys that come through our program, that go off to college, that we're paying for, and they become doctors and you know, positive pillars into their own communities on that side. So yeah. from my standpoint, by far, that's been the real pleasure of this is being a part of that. And again, I think it's, you know, it goes beyond it. The educational component of it, but the billets that support these boys, we have one billet that I think she's had almost 75 players live with her over the life. So that's been the great part. And, you know, I just wish and hope that the people of Portland sort of understand not only are you getting a great product, is, you know, we're highlighting Portland by bringing these boys here and what they do for us. So yeah. I think that has been really interesting on that. You know, the challenges are, you know, they're pretty easy, right? We got to get through, you know, some of the challenges of the city. Obviously we're dealing with what the city tells us we have to do in terms of the vaccination mandates and things like that. Mm-hmm. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to make this a good entertainment experience for everybody, and we want people to get behind it. We want people to sort of think as the Winter Hawks is their team.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I can say it's hard to beat when you're watching sports in person. It's hard to beat hockey as a live sporting event, and the value you get in going and you know, on the educational stuff, I always like reminding people that not every team in the WHL requires their kids to go to school, and I've always thought that's a cool note for Portland, because a lot of these guys, and it's the same thing as you know, college football or college basketball or any college sport, that not all of them are going to make it to the pros. And to have that pathway to become a successful adult, whether it's in hockey or somewhere else. I think it's a really cool note. And a lot of these guys end up staying and living in Portland post-career because they love their time here so much. Well, Michael, thank you so much for taking some time for me today. And the listeners in the Winter Hawk podcast, we're really excited to get this thing off the ground and running. And hopefully we can provide some cool insights to players and everything that goes on in running an organization in the WHL. I can't thank you enough for your time today.
Well, thank you, and look forward to it.
Yeah, can't thank Michael enough for his time. He's a busy dude, and I really appreciate him talking to me and the fans, and hope you enjoyed that conversation. He's a passionate guy, and I can't wait to see some of the changes and the upgrades that they're making with this organization. All right, so to Nick Merrick, the guy who we're going to catch up with on every single episode, what has he seen in the first couple of weeks of the season, his thoughts on the way the young team is playing, and their first road trip, which is coming up now starting tomorrow night. And a quick note before we get started, I had this conversation with Nick on Tuesday, so I think he referenced the Seattle game that happened last night. But here is the play-by-play voice of the Portland Winterhawks, Nick Merrick. All right, sitting down again this week for the second Winterhawks podcast with my buddy and the play-by-play voice of the Portland Winterhawks, Nick Merrick. Nick, it's been a couple of weeks. You know, I know listeners enjoyed the first one last week that was kind of a rearview mirror, if you will, because we recorded it before the start of the season. But I want to ask you, I mean, you've had a chance now to see this team play a number of times, and I know we're still kind of waiting to see what the roster is going to look like and some announcements and all that, but what has stood out to you here in the first 3 or 4 weeks of the regular season?
Well, I think the first thing right off the bat, Andy, is the fact that the fans are back. I think that's very exciting just to get that environment back. It was something that the teams weren't used to last year, really across the board, professionally in juniors and Bantams. And of course, it's been nationwide. So feeling the energy off the fan base, I think, is first and foremost the most exciting part of this first month. Secondly, the fact that the Hawks have a young team and they're slowly but surely coming together. I think it's a little bit, it'd be false if I were to say this for the start the team were expecting. I think the Hawks were hoping to probably have a few more wins under their belt by this time for our second episode. But the wins will come. That takes some time. It's a tough system that Mike Johnson and his coaching staff run, and with some of those younger players and trying to develop after not having any of the fan energy last year, now being in front of rinks that, you know, are at least have some fans and some energy naturally built in. Those things will slowly transition, and you'll start getting the Hawks back in the win column. But a couple of big weeks upcoming here for Portland, and just kind of great to be in hockey, and it certainly feels like hockey outside here in Oregon.
It really does. And it's hockey weather finally. We finally got it. It's no longer, you know, the sunshine's kind of gone. It's time to go inside the rink and enjoy some hockey. You pointed to it, though, and I feel like it's almost a staple every year of Mike Johnston's teams that, you know, the system you mentioned and maybe the young guys adapting to it and not having the full amount of time maybe last year for some of the players, but they seemingly get better every single year, no matter matter how they start, this team always kind of finds its way to hit a gear. Who stood out the most to you? I know it's probably tough because a handful of guys have played really well for them early on. You know, Cross Hannes is off to a great start. James Stephon, it's been fun to watch him. But who stood out the most to you through the first however many games?
I think we can go a couple different directions with this. I agree with you, Andy. I think just having some of those guys back from Lincoln who were loaned last year, they've really all taken an extra step from Cross and Clay and James and Jack. Obviously, they're kind of sitting on top of the leaderboard in points as they were expected to. Mm-hmm. I think Robbie Fromm-DeLorme is a forward who made some nice jumps. He's kind of been more of a defensive role and had to take on a different team role to fill in a big void from some of those players graduating last season. He's dealing with a little bit of an injury now, so he might be out, you know, for the next week or two. But he's been a player who's really stepped up for Brian Peller for Don Hay, on the penalty kill side and has been pretty reliable in his own zone. Gabe Clausen's found a nice scoring touch, mm-hmm. and he's kind of getting rewarded with some more time in the power play. So that's a guy in his third season that's making that next leap. And, you love to see that out of an 18-year-old player. And overall, from the rookies, it's pretty easy to assess. But, of course, it's one of those where you're going to know, as we're talking with you just mentioned that Mike's teams, they take a while. When you talk with Mike Johnson, he always mentions he likes to look around the holiday time to really assess the team and see where their holes are, what they're lacking, what they need to improve upon for that second half of the season. So it's tough because whenever I talk to him, I'm always kind of like pushing towards that time frame as well, where you just have to give it some time to fester. But there's players who have come on central scouting that are already recognized for the next level at the NHL. Marek Alscher, the import defenseman, is one of those of highlight. I think he's kind of adjusting very well to the North American style of game as a 17-year-old defenseman. He's a big, broad-shouldered D-man, 6'3", about 210. So he kind of brings some nice size and really trying to work on a good two-way game. But you can feel his presence on the ice. And I know it's interesting because for some of those European players, they get to play on bigger ice. But when I talked to Marek, he was kind of used to the smaller North American style, based on when he played back home in Czech Republic. He said, yeah, I know I played on some bigger rinks, but my home rink was pretty similar to the one here in Portland. So it's helped him a little bit in his transition. And then you get Marcus Nguyen and Ryder Thompson as two other players who were with the team last year. Yeah. Now, of course, more leadership role on the team. They're still technically classified as rookies, which is going to be ironic to say this whole year, but they have those 24 games under their belt. But in the coaching staff eyes, they're still rookies because they haven't been faced with this environment. And point production-wise for those two in particular have been very good right off the get-go, both calm players. And, of course, then the NHL executives and the scouting board's already caught an eye on them. So, just with those three plus a plethora of others who are going to learn this system and continue to grow, it should be a really exciting year in terms of getting those young guys experienced and a more veteran lineup.
Yeah, you pointed to something there, and I wanted to touch on it because, for those who are new to the podcast or new to hockey, the differences between the international game and the American game, that's one of those little things that you don't think about a ton when a player comes over from overseas and is getting their first action in the WHL. So, I mean, how difficult is that transition? You've been around these guys for, a number of years. You've seen some players come and go. How tough is that transition for the guys that are getting their first taste in the WHL?
I think there's a couple different barriers for that. First and foremost, of course, you have to talk about the language barrier and see how the young player's English is coming over here, whether they've been experienced or taking classes. Some are, of course, in a better stage coming in than others, but you're fully immersing yourself in a different culture. So someone who may be used to, kind of playing hockey and having the Swiss Alps in their back door, and they'll be taking trips to Germany for some international tournaments. It's just a whole different lifestyle there. When they come to Portland, obviously they kind of get immersed into that culture. It's more relaxed. Of course, they still get that chilliness during the fall and you're a couple, an hour drive away from the mountains or the beach. So I think in terms of the geography, they certainly love it. But it comes into that. And then, of course, schooling is important. So now you got to adjust to a whole new schooling system, which I'm sure isn't the easiest to do if you're coming in from Europe. And then it's just trying to fit in with the team. And I think the one thing that the Hawks do a very good job on, and it really speaks to the culture in the locker room and some of those, 19, 20-year-old leaders that's been passed on through the years of really just taking those guys under their wing, making sure they know they feel home, they're a part of the team, they aren't an outsider. Of course, they're outside of the country, but now they're a part of this Winterhawks team, and they're going to be a key part of the future. And you can kind of see it, too, and even the production from some of those players. I can even look back at Oliver Bjorkstrand when he was here, not saying he had a bad rookie season by any means, but it's funny because you get a guy who's extremely talented, very high-end draft pick. Maybe at first the scoring touch was kind of there, then all of a sudden he ends his career in Portland, he puts up 60 goals. So it's kind of that maturing process as well for some of these players of coming through in their 17, like Marek Alscher, coming in like their 18, like Jonas Bronberg did. So he's here now for his third season as the second import player. It's very fascinating to kind of see them grow, and they have a ton of personality too, which is always neat. I know COVID times are kind of halting the fan-player interaction a little bit more this year, and we're trying to get around that. But when we get some of these nice season ticket holder events up and running again for the second part of the season, and you get to kind of have some more interaction with the players, it'll be very fun for them, I think, too, to kind of feel that energy and that personality coming out of those different guys.
You know, we're eight games into the season, and I would argue part of the reason why Portland, you know, isn't off to maybe the start they want is because they've had to face Everett now, and Everett just seems like a juggernaut. You know, so six games in, they've only allowed 9 goals in 6 games. I know it was a tough weekend against them with back-to-back games on Friday and Saturday. So on that, I know Portland is excited to, you know, this year, because they couldn't last year play some teams outside of the U.S. division. I think a road trip coming up to Kamloops and, you know, get to play Kelowna here soon. So that'll be nice to get those games back on the schedule. But what has stood out, you know, getting a chance to see now Everett and Spokane and Tri-City and Seattle, who they play again here tomorrow night. What has stood out so far for you in the U.S. division?
I think Everett's the big surprise point, of course. I feel like looking at them on paper, on, you know, which everyone has to do preseason-wise, you kind of try to pin teams where you think they might end up. From my perspective, I thought Everett would be a team who'd be very competitive, but I think they'd be missing some top-end talent and some holes, but clearly that's been almost the exact opposite. I mean, I know they have 2 NHL defensemen on their back end. The goaltending's been spectacular to start for them. I think they've only allowed, 9 goals in the first 5 games they've played, so obviously playing that Everett Silvertip style of hockey of just shutting down opponents. And unfortunately for the Hawks, a couple of shutouts against them, but that's going to happen. It was kind of a weird situation this past weekend with I know the team was a little frustrated with the ice conditions, kind of got some hopping pucks. So Everett's kind of stood out as maybe the team to beat in the early on, obviously climbing the CHL leaderboard just like the Winter Hawks did a week or two ago. Everyone else pretty much kind of came in as expected to a degree. I think Seattle still has that very high-end talent team. They can play physical. They can play with speed. We saw a little bit of that from the Winter Hawks this past weekend against Everett. I think that really caught some attention. And certainly if the Hawks are capable of playing that way, of playing that gritty style, winning battles, finishing checks, but then also putting the puck in the back of the net, once that comes along here in the next week or two, then this is going to be a very dangerous Winter Hawk team. So the U.S. division is kind of shaping up probably how I would have thought. I figured it would have been Portland, Seattle, Everett, 1, 2, and 3 in some kind of order. Selfishly, I would have liked to see the Hawks be number one, but I think that could come in time where they'll be able to chase that down. And then Tri-City and Spokane are two programs who are still rebuilding, but they have some tremendous pieces, and they'll be kind of interesting to see how they fit into the picture once we get more of a sample size from them. And you mentioned the trip over to British Columbia and being able to travel to Canada. That's going to be a great test for the Hawks. It's coming up in a week. It'll be a full week on the road, which Mike actually likes doing earlier because it allows the team to bond and you're kind of with each other 24/7 for the entire 7 days. Team leaves on a Monday morning, November 1st, I think it is, and then they come back on Sunday. So you're literally on the road for that whole time. You got 3 different teams, 3 different arenas. The coaching staff always does a tremendous job of doing their pre-scout video and kind of showcasing as much knowledge as they can to allow their team to be successful against these opponents, because of course, they haven't faced them yet this season, so you have to go off what you see on the film. And we have 3 of the best with Don, Brian, and Mike to be able to evaluate those in the locker room. So I know the players will be in good hands from that regard. And the Hawks always tend to do well against the out-of-division teams, because U.S. division teams kind of have more sample size against Portland.
Sure,
they can figure it out. They can understand what Portland's skill is. How do we combat it? So you get more personal experience through it. But now when you're trying to teach that from a BC team side and try to show them Portland's system, it's a little different. The two divisions play a little different, so it creates different mismatches. So this year in particular, though, British Columbia League, it's very talented. There's some good high-end hockey players in Vancouver and Kelowna and Kamloops, and those are the 3 teams the Hawks are going to hit here in the next week. So I think that'll be a great test to kind of see just where they fit kind of in a more general Western Conference perspective. And then, of course, from my perspective, from the coaches, they'll be able to see those other teams in person, too, which can give you more knowledge. But it should be a kind of a growing year, if you will, for the Hawks. This will be a key week you'll look back on and say, okay, what was accomplished during this week? Even if it's not 3 straight wins, what came out of the weekend that's going to benefit this team heading into the holidays.
Yeah, you mentioned using that kind of, you know, bonding experience that first road trip. I also saw Mike note he liked playing Everett twice, and I know it didn't go the way that they wanted to, but just kind of learning from those games and getting that experience against a good team that plays that tough kind of gritty style, that it can pay dividends as the year goes on. Those are great teaching moments for a young team that's trying to find their footing. Let's talk about the goaltending situation for a moment. You know, Dante Genuzzi taking over as the primary goaltender, and you know, I remember him being Saturday Night Genuzzi and getting some of those TV starts in years past. What have you seen from him? And then also got to be kind of cool to see Lachlan Gordon start his first game in front of the home crowd. He's played great so far in that reserve role in his first two starts.
Yeah, I think it's a great 1-2 tandem right now the Winterhawks have going. You know, it all starts from within. If there's any animosity there, you might not get the best performance out of the two goaltenders, but it's one of those where they're both friends off the ice and they both push each other to improve on the ice during battle drills and through practices. So that friendship has kind of really helped them get off to a strong start and feel comfortable this season. For Dante, it's a different load. It kind of goes back to what we said with the younger guys. He was the man last year. It was Dante's net. He knew he was the guy, and they brought in Brock Gould last year to kind of help you support role and give him a couple of days off when he gets some 3-3 weekends and you have a harder schedule. But then coming into this year, same kind of vibe, but now you're doing the same thing last year, but with the aspect of the fans. So you kind of have to readjust the hockey player back to that, where last year you had to build more energy yourself on the bench. So it felt more of like a glorified practice or a scrimmage setting, even though the games counted in terms of records. Nobody was fighting for anything, so it's just a different intensity now when you come in and say, hey, we can go for the Edge Chanel Cup, the Memorial Cup's in reach. You're going to get hungry teams, and you're going to see that quickly. So I think the goaltending's done a very good job early on. I think Dante's going to continue to get more comfortable as he keeps seeing more games, and he has the trust of the coaching staff for sure. From Lachlan Gordon's perspective, I think that's been a very pleasant surprise. Just a tremendous man who came to Portland now, feels like 3 or 4 years ago when he initially signed, but then just because of everything going on with Joel Hofer and bringing in that NHL caliber goaltender a few years ago for a playoff push, Gordon was kind of a signed goaltender on the outside looking in, got some incredible work put in and the younger levels, played some juniors last year, and then really stood out during Neely Cup. So during training camp, one of those situations where it was kind of between Lachlan Gordon and Mason Dunsford at the time, another goaltender who they thought to bring in as a backup for Dante this year in that trade with Tri-City. And then Lachlan Gordon kind of just stole the spot. He was a little step above and played very well in preseason play. I think his numbers were 1 or 2 goals allowed tops and about 4 periods of work in preseason. Wow. And he's carried that momentum right into the regular season. So 2 great starts, 1 on the road in Seattle, 1 at home against Everett. And you hold an Everett team to just 1 goal. So the same team that just scored 5 the other night and kind of came out with a different energy, the team responded to that. Of course, it's the players in front as well. But Gordon looked tremendous. He stopped 24 shots in that Saturday start. And now it's going to be really interesting to see how they were able to balance that workload going down the down the line, because the schedule's only going to get tougher. There's going to be some more road games coming up until the Hawks are, I think, they have about a 10 or 11 straight home game stint coming up in middle November through pretty much Christmas. So that's going to be a very nice time for the Hawks and Hawks fans to get some good hockey action here in the WHL right in Portland.
Yeah, and every coach would tell you they love to have 2 goaltenders that they trust. That's a good problem to have when you feel good about both guys you're sending out there, whether it's just give Dante a breather, whether you're leaning on Lachlan because he's riding a heater. You know, either way, that's a good problem to have. It's a great sign early on. Just on your personal note, how nice has it been to call games with fans back now?
Oh, it's been tremendous. I mean, that's an understatement of the century there, Andy, but you and I knew from last season, the little glimpse we got with kind of without that fans, without anything to build upon. And you just kind of come in, you have your papers printed out, you're at your little broadcast booth and you're going. This year, it's more personal. I think that's what makes it fun for the Winterhawks, and what makes this role fun for me is you get to interact with so many more of the fans and just enjoy some conversations before the game, kind of see the warm-ups that's now, going to have more of a buzz around it when the teams first come out of the ice. You get your shows in the arena again rather than just, no need to bring on any entertainment value if you aren't entertaining right. Anyone in the arena. So now everyone's entertainment departments are back up and running, and, there's more things going on in the Jumbotron and out in the concourse, so you just really feel that buzz. And it kind of just it gives you life again, right? Like, it makes you feel – it gets you excited. It says, hey, it's hockey season. It feels kind of our new normal right now. So we're getting back into it. And honestly couldn't be happier with that perspective. Now let's just hope we continue to get a ton out, because we need some fans to keep bringing that energy, for these next games here in November. The team's home on Wednesday night to wrap up the October schedule, and then it's going to be a couple weeks on the road. But I truly think that the energy was pretty darn good on Saturday. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where it's always hard to get out and switch your mindset, if you will, to coming out to Winter Hawks hockey. But the fans were really engaged. It was a 1-0 game. It had a great atmosphere in there. And that's what you love to see out of just WHL hockey in general, is kind of that environment and that feeling you get when you come into these rinks.
Yeah, it's great to have that atmosphere back. Great to have it. It feels like a sense of normalcy, if you will, that things are getting there. And I think a lot of fans are hopefully just kind of reminding themselves, hey, it's right. Hockey season's back. I can go to games again this year, and I can't wait to see that crowd continue to grow as the year goes on. Nick Merrick, the voice of the Portland Winter Hawks, and buddy, we always appreciate it. Great update on the team and how things are looking. Enjoy that road trip next week, getting back on the bus. That'll be fun for a week, and we'll catch up again, do this on episode 3.
Indeed. Thanks, Andy. Hopefully I'll bring back some good stories from the road we can talk about. Hopefully a few extra wins too on this nice road trip coming up.
I can't thank Michael Kramer and Nick Merrick enough. Those guys were awesome, and I hope you enjoyed your episode 2. What's to come for the Portland Winterhawks? I wish I could tell you to go to winterhawks.com and get your tickets for an upcoming game, but they're on the road. It starts tomorrow night in Everett, and boy, Everett has been an absolute monster so far this season, and they look like the juggernaut that they've been the last couple of years defensively, not allowing a lot of goals. Portland has had a hard time with them here early on. They got shut out in Everett back on October 8th, 4-0. This past Friday, Everett came to town, beat him 5-2, and then, of course, a 1-0 shutout on Saturday night. I do want to highlight Lachlan Gordon. He has been a real bright spot, I think, for Portland early on, and I know, as Nick and I were just mentioning, they feel great about their goaltending situation, and Lachlan is just a cool story, a guy who's been around developing for a couple of years, finally getting his first run, and saving 25 of 26 shots in that loss to Everett the other night, and coming in and mop-up duty last night after Dante got off to a rough start. But love stories like that. Guys waiting his time, finally getting his chance, and he's taking advantage of it. His numbers on the season are pretty solid. So that road trip's going to start Friday night in Everett, and then on to Kamloops, British Columbia, then to Kelowna, and then they wrap up in Vancouver for the Canadian swing of things before they then hit Seattle and Tri-City. So it's going to be a long road trip. They are on the road starting Friday the 29th, and then all the way the road trip ends on Saturday, November 13th, before they finally get to come home and play Everett here back in Portland. So they're in Everett, Kamloops, Kelowna, Vancouver, Seattle, and Tri-City up in Kennewick, and then finally back home. So a long road trip. And, you know, as we mentioned last year, Portland didn't have the chance for this. It was all U.S. division matchups. So it's been a while since the team has been on a trip like this, and I can't wait to see how they perform. Young guys, as Nick mentioned, Mike Johnson likes to get his young teams on the bus early and kind of bonding together and coming together as a team. And it's a great early challenge for them. It's going to be a fun swing, and we'll see how Portland can handle it. That would do it for us here on episode 2 of the Portland Winterhawks podcast. Portland is back in town. As I mentioned, the next home game is going to be on Tuesday, November 16th. So we'll be off next week, and then back the week after that. We're going to start diving into some player features. I'll catch up with Nick. We'll talk about how the road trip went, and I can't wait to do it again, episode 3. Thank you so much for being a part of episode 2. Our thanks again to Michael Kramer and Nick Merrick. I'm your host, Andy Dirt Johnson. Until next time, go Hawks.
Yes, I do.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's a new year, and it's time to get your picks in 26 with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop Bob's for hot new styles featuring the latest technology, like stylish sleeper sectionals with immersive Bluetooth audio, relaxing reclining sofas with LED lighting, and fabulous fireplaces with mood lighting and speakers, all at Bob's everyday low prices, of course. So if you want to refresh your room for less, save big by stopping in or shopping online at Bob's Discount Furniture.
You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio.
The holidays are behind us and school routines are back. Now is the time to help your kids start the new semester strong. IXL helps students refresh what they learned in the fall so they head into the new year feeling confident and prepared. With new units and new goals, IXL is the simplest way to build better habits and stay on top of lessons without the stress. As teachers dive into new material, kids can practice those exact same skills at home to make sure the lessons really stick. IXL is an award-winning platform covering math, language arts, science, and social studies for pre-K through 12th grade. It's personalized, interactive, and actually fun. Keep your kids motivated for the second half of the year at IXL.com. Don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Confronting high credit card debt can feel scary. But the good news is if you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, financial relief options are now available. National Debt Relief is currently offering debt relief designed to reduce what you owe, fast-tracking your way to being debt-free. If you qualify for debt relief, you may be able to pay back significantly less than what you owe and save thousands of dollars. Imagine only paying one low monthly program payment you can afford and saving money as you become debt-free. National Debt Relief has already helped bring debt relief to over 550,000 U.S. consumers, earning thousands of five-star reviews and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. You're stronger than your credit card debt. Take the first step and visit NationalDebtRelief.com to see what debt relief you may qualify for. That's NationalDebtRelief.com.